Who's more surprised to be in this final, Seattle or Toronto?
That's a really good question. I would probably say Seattle in the sense that they had to go beat arguably the greatest season we've ever seen. And I know Toronto fans will argue about what they did, you know, in 17. And yet when you look at LAFC, they broke all those records and the way they got after it, how dominant they've been at home. Seattle needed arguably their best performance they've ever had in franchise history. And I just think Toronto's understated in the sense that when you look at them since 2016, the truth of the matter is this group of players has played probably some of the biggest games. So they've had that experience. They had to go win a game on a baseball field in New York before the playoffs started. I had predicted that Toronto would win that. And now last night's win against Atlanta was a little fortunate. Jose Martinez misses a penalty, but you got to give Toronto a ton of credit for persevering, for fighting through that. They're missing Omar Gonzalez, Jose Altidore. So to answer your question, I think Seattle's got to be not more surprised that they are in it, but just in the manner that they do it, and ultimately that they're hosting MLS Cup, because that's a huge surprise, I think, to everyone in Seattle. Mm.
Taylor, you and Ian Dark will have this game for the American broadcast on ESPN?
John Champion.
John Champion will do it. But Taylor, you luck out. Yep. You work with some of the great soccer voices of all time.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie to you. I kind of feel like Alex Rodriguez when he signed the $300 million deal with the Rangers, and then the Yankees said, you know what, let's extend that to another 10 years. I kind of feel like A-Rod.
Well, I'll say this.
Not the same numbers, Richard.
I was just going to say, Taylor, you work at the new ESPN. Let's forget about Alex Rodriguez numbers.
Yeah. Low blow. Jesus. God.
Taylor's doing fine. Signed a really long-term deal with ESPN. He's okay. Taylor, in terms of Toronto FC, you have watched MLS this year, and there's a clear sort of line where the club sort of became a different club. I don't know what the number is exactly, but they're like, I think 7-0-1 in the last 8 games, or 8-0-1, something to that effect. So from afar,
especially
on the road. What, in your opinion, Taylor, what changed? What changed for this group? At least, you know, halfway, three quarters in the season.
Well, it's interesting, Richard, because what you bring up is a lot of people within MLS circles, and I think a lot of people in Toronto, as of June 1st, July 1st, wanted to blow this thing up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they wondered if they were too old, if they hadn't signed the right players. You know, Pozuelo's been a great signing, a fantastic signing. He's really almost made Giovinco forgotten, as harsh as that may sound. But Pozuelo's been great. I think the biggest thing is they went and got Omar Gonzalez. Since Omar Gonzalez has signed the team, even though he hasn't played in these playoff games, they've only lost one of, if not 16, 17 games. So that solidified the back line. But I'm going to go back to my previous answer. There's a real experience within this group of playing in big games, 16, 17, MLS Cup Finals, CONCACAF Champions League final. Even though they haven't gone their way for them necessarily, they've had that experience. And I just think right around August 1st, Greg Vanney, you know, kind of pushed that button and said, listen, we did forget about the previous 4.5-5 months. All we need to do is get into the playoffs. Yes, we're going to have to go win some road games, but they're unbeaten in their last 8 games on the road with Greg Vanney at the helm. So I think experience came through. Now, Richard, truth of the matter is, it kind of takes away from this MLS Cup one-and-done game and the momentum that it did, making the regular season more important, because ultimately Toronto was the 9th best team in MLS, and it's kind of reverted back to the old ways of saying if you get hot at the right time, you get through. But I just think it really is the experience of this group that, you know what, we've got 2 months to right the ship. They've done that. And now if they get Jose Altidore back, who knows in this MLS Cup what they can do again on the road in Seattle.
In conversation with Taylor Twellman of ESPN. Let me throw something at you, Taylor. I heard you and the call of the game you and Ian had in the Canada-U.S. Canada-U.S. match here.
Taylor,
I listened to it. It was terrific. I actually gave you an inordinate amount of credit in my column that I wrote on it. But I may be off base here, but can I ask you, why is Greg Vanney not coaching the U.S. men's team?
I don't know that. I honestly
should he be?
I came up with He should have been in the conversation, absolutely. And the fact that he didn't get an interview is completely irresponsible and ridiculous from the U.S. Soccer Federation. That's fact, not opinion. I think when you have the worst moment in your federation's history and losing in Trinidad and you don't go to the World Cup, Jeff, quite honestly, you should have interviewed 12 to 15 people.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't mean that you're going to hire 12 to 15 people, but you're going to pick up little things from 12 and 15 people that they see about the federation. You take your notes and you do your due diligence. They say they interviewed two people. I'm not even sure they even interviewed Oscar Pereira.
Mm.
It's irresponsible, and it's now a byproduct of what it is. And listen, it's not a slight on Greg Berhalter, but Greg Berhalter, excuse me, is a very young, inexperienced coach that had glimpses of some real good stuff with the Columbus Crew. But you had Tata Martino say publicly, I am very interested in the United States Soccer Men's National Team head job, and you say he doesn't speak English. Like, are we really having that kind of conversation?
Right.
So when this process was going on, to answer your question, I had six guys with a higher winning percentage than Greg Berhalter. Greg Vanney was number two on that list. Absolutely, 100% Greg Vanney should have been interviewed. He should have been interviewed twice. I'm not sure he should have got that job, but I know sure as heck he should have been in the conversation because he had the same amount of experience. He had more success than Greg Berhalter. Yes, he had a larger checkbook. So what? It is what it is. But the fact that you don't interview Jesse Marsh, Greg Vanney, Tata Martino, you go around the world, I think that's a byproduct of where we are now, and it's unfortunate, but it is irresponsible for the Federation to not have done their due diligence.
Mm. Taylor, understandably, you spent a lot of time on what you thought of the U.S.'s performance against Canada that night because, of course, you're an American broadcaster and you do the U.S. national team games. But you are someone, I know this, who has spent a lot of time watching Canada. You're very familiar with their players. Uh-huh. From your perspective, what did you think of the Canadian men's national team?
For the first time watching the Canadian national team in a long time, they had a couple game changers, and they're both young. I think the fact that Alfonso Davies and David, and you've got guys like this that can now all of a sudden haven't even touched the peak of their career. They're playing at a high level over in Europe. They've got now a couple game changers. But the one thing the Canadians have always had, and by the way, the United States has had this as well, is team unity, an ability to roll up your sleeves and win an ugly game if you have to. There is a real belief from the Canadian national team. And now you add in some quality. Keep in mind, Mark Anthony Kaye came out 6 minutes into the game.
Mm-hmm.
He is what he'd start for the U.S. men's national team right now if he was healthy. They're good. They are a solid team. They're going to play themselves into the hex. I said that 2 years ago, the moment I saw Jonathan David and Alfonso Davies play. They've got to figure out their back line. Richard, that's fact, not opinion. That back line is porous, and it just makes that United States performance even more mind-boggling because the one Achilles heel for the Canadian men's national team is the center back position. They struggle there. They don't have enough quality there at the international level, but their midfield can make up for that, and I think you saw that against the United States.
Mm. Taylor, where is MLS right now? Do you think it's in a good place?
I do. It's a good question because I think too often we get caught up in these expansion stories with the Atlantas and the LAFCs and Miami coming in and now Nashville and St. Louis and who knows where that goes. And yet I don't think Toronto gets enough credit. I'm not saying this because I'm talking to you guys in Canada. The fact of the matter is, in the Major League Soccer that I played in, when Toronto came in, there was a real change of fandom and what it meant. People were drinking beers. It was young professionals. It wasn't families. It wasn't kids in the stands. It was men. It was women. It was young. They were arguing. They were booing. I remember 2017 MLS Cup. I was giving out the MLS Cup trophy in the stands. I told Richard this story, and I got booed because of the Revolution versus Toronto games. And me being in Toronto scoring goals, that's where the real arrival of Major League Soccer has come. Seattle took it to another level, and now on top of it, you throw LAFC and Atlanta. MLS is in a real good spot. In saying that, there's still a ton of room to grow. And I think a big place that it needs to grow is you've got to find a way in these games that we see in the playoffs, and we're going to announce today, we had over 800,000 people in back-to-back playoff games, guys, watch this game via Deportes and ESPN. Those are massive numbers. How do you get that to watch regular season? How do you make your regular season have more jeopardy to it? And I think that's part of the growth of MLS. I still think they're trying to figure it out, expansion coming in. But if you add that element, I know there's no promotion relegation, but you can still add that. If they find that, I think all of a sudden you're going to see some real interesting growth to this league. And you're having younger players come over. I know Zlatan scored, 60 goals in 2 years as a 55-year-old. But the truth of the matter is the Joseph Martinez of the world and the Miguel Almirones that are sold, Carlos Vela coming over before he's 30. That's where the real change of this league has happened compared to when, I was playing and it was David Beckham, Thierry Henry, and Juan Pablo Angel.
Yeah, and we also have to mention, though, Taylor, that Zlatan is Zlatan. Right.
Yeah, I mean, it's what he does. We've got the Statue of Liberty in the United States. As he said, Sweden's got a Statue of Zlatan.